Hi, this is Mike Clark with Christmas Music 24/7, and this evening I am talking with David Young, whose Christmas album, A Christmas I'll Remember, just came out this year. Thanks for talking with me, David.
My pleasure, Michael.
You're a pretty busy guy. I see on your website that you were in Europe last week, and you'll be in Minnesota tomorrow. Do you do a lot of traveling throughout the year?
Yeah, I travel about 40 weeks of the year. I was in Germany. I filmed a Christmas movie at the world's largest and most famous Christmas store in Rothenburg, Germany. It's called the Wolfhart Christmas Store. And it's 10,000 square feet of only handmade, hand-painted Christmas items. And
wow.
Yeah, it was an amazing experience. I performed there 2 years ago. And while I was performing there, I had this idea to make this little music video that turned into a full-blown made-for-television movie. And it took about 6 months to make, and it was all filmed out there in Germany in this amazing village. It's got cobblestone streets and gingerbread houses. It's a walled city, and so it's an amazing place. It's kind of like, I think it's one of the Christmas capitals of the world, David.
Oh, yeah? Well, that's neat.
The film comes out in Europe right now this year, and it'll come out here in America next year.
Oh, okay.
And yeah, so a lot of the songs in my new Christmas CD that's called A Christmas I'll Remember, a lot of these songs are also in this film. It's called Village of Dreams.
Village of Dreams. Are you in it as more than just a singer, performer, or are you an actor?
Well, I am an actor in the movie. I play the angel of music in the story. The story is about a boy who wants to become a musician, but he loses his hearing in a winter accident, so an angel of music is sent to teach him of the golden keys that make any wish possible. So I play 12 songs in the movie. I teach the kid what he needs to learn.
Well, that's pretty neat. Is that movie going to be, like, it's not going to be movie theater, it's going to be TV or cable?
Yeah, it's a made-for-television movie. So it's basically 55 minutes long.
Uh-huh.
And our intention is to have it played on the networks in America.
Right.
As well as in other countries. It'll come out in Japan next year, and I think it's going to be in about 4 different languages.
Well, that's pretty cool.
That was a fun experience, you know.
Yeah. Your website and even your CD has a lot of information about how you got started and about your history of music, going all the way back to learning the recorder back in 3rd grade. And I laughed when I read that because, of course, I did the recorder in 6th grade, did it for the year, and then that's all I ever did.
Yeah, well, most people, that's all you do. You know, you take it in school, and when the term is over, it goes usually goes in a junk drawer. You know, or it doesn't usually get handed down to your little brother or your little sister. You know, mm-hmm. It usually just goes right in the drawer. I was really lucky because for some reason, when I took it in 3rd grade, I was terrible at it the first year, but for some strange reason, they gave us 2 years of the recorder. During the second year, I just seemed to get it on the second year, where the first year I didn't get it at all. So it was really a real great way for me to start with music. And while I was listening to the radio over the summer after I first started to play, I started to hear the songs and try to pick out the melody. It's called playing by ear.
Uh-huh.
And so after I got this playing by ear thing down, it kind of opened up the whole door for me of playing the instrument and really enjoying it, because I didn't have to just play the music on the paper.
Mm-hmm.
I could listen to the radio and play along.
Mm-hmm.
And after a couple of years of that, I got really good at it, and I was, you know, probably 10 years old. My parents recognized that I had this talent for this, so they found a music teacher who was actually the most knowledgeable Baroque and Renaissance music teacher in New York City. His name is Phil Levin, and he played bassoon in the New York Philharmonic Orchestra, and going to his studio every Saturday morning for my music lesson was the equivalent of going to a music museum, because he would fix all of these instruments that were sent from all over the world, from the museums of all over the world. Most of these instruments are never even seen in our culture anymore. They're all like 200-300 years old.
Right.
The most recognizable instrument would be something like a harpsichord,
uh-huh.
which is similar to a piano but much smaller and has a very different sound.
Right.
And I studied with Phil Levin for, I think it was 2 years, up until I heard my first Jethro Tull CD. And once I heard Jethro Tull, oh, that was the end of my classical career. because Jeff Rotel had a flute player who was a wild man. He was so fun, and the music, he had so much energy, and it was just such a blast to hear that. That's what I really, I thought that was much more fun than playing classical music. And,
right.
And so I got Aqualung, uh-huh. Remember that CD, Aqualung, and I learned all the flute parts. And then after I learned the flute parts, I had listened to the CD so many times that on my little recorder, I learned how to play all the guitar solos on my recorder.
Oh, wow.
I was, you know, a child of the 70s, and I would listen to Led Zeppelin, and I would learn all the guitar solos on my recorder.
Mm-hmm.
That was really a fun thing to do. And but when I got into high school, all my friends had bands, and none of them needed a recorder player. You know,
right.
So they all needed, you know, guitar players and bass players and drummers and uh-huh. singers. So I took up playing the guitar in high school, and that took me on this wild tangent of playing in rock bands all over the country. And I played in so many bands with so many people, some of them who are now very famous. And I was a lead guitar player. I actually did, it's hard to believe that it's the same person, but in an AC/DC tribute band, I did the part of Angus, and I toured America for 2 years dressing up like Angus Young from AC/DC. People who know me as the flute man, you'd never know. You would
right.
never. You know, it was like the most Jekyll and Hyde musical adventure you could ever have, you know.
Right.
So I ended up in California in 1990 after the AC/DC thing had disbanded and everything, and I was down to my last $100, and I was really in a desperate situation. And one of my friends said, you know, you play the recorder so well, maybe you should try going down to Venice Beach and playing your recorders down at Venice Beach. And that was the last place in the world that I ever wanted to be, playing on the street, a street musician. No way,
right.
You know. Especially coming from a rock and roll background, you know.
Right.
I was so desperate for money because I was down to my last $100. I had to give it a shot because I didn't know what else to do.
Uh-huh.
And so I met this girl at the beach who played the harp, and we, long story short, we started to play together, and it sounded good.
Mm-hmm.
And we made a tape with the last $100 that I had, and we brought that tape back to Venice Beach the following week and made 50 copies of it, and we didn't have the money for a photo session or fancy printing, so we had these black and white copies of this picture of a girl playing a harp and a guy playing a flute. It was
yeah.
a hand, like a pencil drawing, and
we
had 50 copies made at Kinko's, and Kinko's had these colored magic markers and these colored pencils, and they were free if you wanted to use them inside the Kinko's, so we colored in the black and white pictures of the flute man and the harp girl.
Right.
With crayons and magic markers, and fortunately we sold all 50 of those tapes. They were cassette tapes back then.
Right.
We sold all 50 of the tapes down at the beach.
Uh-huh.
And so each week we would make a little bit more. We might make 70 copies for a couple of weeks and 100 copies. And after 2 years, we had sold 10,000 copies of these tapes. They were called Celestial Winds,
And
they were all colored by hand.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and it wasn't like a big deal. We didn't have to do 10,000 at one time because that would have been insane. But each week we would, you know, after we had built it up, we were doing 200 a week, 300 a week, and we'd play in the weekends. And I don't know if you ever seen that Seinfeld episode about the puffy shirt.
Yeah, I saw that, yeah.
Well, I always used to wear this white puffy shirt, like a Renaissance shirt or a pirate shirt. You know, it has like the white, it's white and it has like a shoelace in the middle that you would tie it together in big puff sleeves, you know?
Right.
And way back then, right around when we were making these homemade tapes, we had bought this shirt at a Salvation Army for me, you know, because we needed something that went with this Renaissance. school there, and I think they're 10 years old when they learn it in Germany. And the saxophone or the clarinet or any woodwind. But I'm the only in the beginning, she was playing the harp for like 3 days. That's like mental torture. It's
right.
Just, it makes you nuts. And
yeah.
For the larger recorders, they're more expensive because they're bigger.
Over the years, you've put out
and by some fluke, that album went to number 2 in Canada in 1994. Basically, my friend Brad was a mailman in downtown Toronto. I sent him some of the CDs, and he says, you know, maybe you'd like to have them on. What ended up happening was everybody wanted to have us on because it was a unique thing.
Right.
So we went on basically their version of like Good Morning America and the number. In the middle of a really long road trip, every day we were on a different show or doing something. And when we left, we had 2 more weeks of the tour to do. And we had the bizarre thing about it was that we didn't get home to our answering machine for another, I think it was another 10 days. We got home to this message from the owner of the in Canada in 1994 on that fluke, and it goes to show you it's always good to be nice to your mailman.
So you're still an independent artist. You're not with a major U.S.-based label, correct?
Yeah, that's correct. There are benefits to being an independent artist. You have the freedom to do what to make the music you want. Over the last 15 years, if I added all the CDs I've sold from all of the CDs that I've made, I've sold a million CDs. And, you know, none of it happens in for people 40 weeks a year. Now I have a nice website so people can listen to songs from all the different CDs that I have.
Right. What's your webpage address?
Yeah, it's davidyoungmusic.com.
Yeah, I'm looking at your website right now, and I see you also sell musical greeting cards.
Well, this was an idea that my fiance had. She wanted to be able to use my music, because my fiance minute CD.
Right.
So I made musical cards for and so that's why we did that, and it's been a fun project.
The new Christmas CD, the Christmas I'll Remember, has a bunch of traditional songs, then it has a new one, A Christmas I'll Remember, where you're singing on it.
A lot of famous for something, you know?
Yeah.
I have been a singer and a songwriter my whole life. Basically, when my recorder career started taking off in 1993, and All My Children and Passions, they've used my songs with my voice on it, as well as my instrumental Christmas music, you know. CD of Christmas I'll Remember, and it gives me such joy to hear my flutes. Completely hidden because nobody even knew I played the guitar. I used to have parties in Los Angeles when I lived in L.A. and it'd be a guitar. That I'm thinking, wow, that's amazing. I've been playing this for like God knows how many years. It was just a shock for me to think that, wow, there's so much about me that you don't know, and you're one of my closest friends, you
right.
know?
Yep.
Yeah, so Christmas I'll Remember is really fun because it blends all these instruments together.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I've got a list of questions here. These are called the 12 questions of Christmas. I'm going to say a couple different items, and you just choose the one that's more applicable to you. Christmas tree, should it be real or artificial?
I don't think it matters.
Do you put the tree up before or after Thanksgiving?
That's a good one. The reason why I'm laughing is because normally it goes up on Thanksgiving weekend, but we shot
Do you prefer instrumental or vocals?
I enjoy both. I think at nighttime I enjoy instrumental more, and daytime I enjoy vocals more.
Yeah, a lot of these questions we've already talked about, but I'm still going to ask you. Traditional or contemporary music?
I have to say I probably enjoy contemporary music more. All the people But I think I'd have to say I like contemporary music, and I like signature, which means
right.
how fast or slow it is, you know.
Uh-huh.
The keeper.
Right.
So in order to play, you had to really listen to listening to each other. I've made over 30 albums. I think when you're really listening to the people that you're playing with, it's like you're listening with your heart. Comes from your head,
right.
You know. I guess I would say, yeah, I like contemporary music more than I would like traditional music. Wonderful insights into their music, and you know, there's so many people who record music in their you have to pull from,
right,
the richer the musical flavor is going to be.
What goes on top of the tree, a star or an angel?
An angel.
Do you prefer Rudolph or Frosty?
I think I prefer Rudolph.
Fudge or fruitcake?
Fruitcake. I like fruitcake. I'm not big on chocolate.
Okay. Classical or jazz?
Do I have to answer that one?
You could say both or neither.
Okay, I guess I'll say classical.
Do you take the Christmas tree? How about The Night Before Christmas or Luke Chapter 2?
The Night Before Christmas.
And M&M's, plain or peanut? Share with us about your upcoming projects or Christmas I'll Remember or anything like that.
With the whole thing of me pulling together the flutes and the guitars and my voice and everything, the rock opera which I did is called Woodstock. This is something that I'm really excited about because it's something that I get to pull all the different things that I do together in one. It's a love story that takes place in Woodstock, New York, 30 years after the festival.
Uh-huh.
And the two main characters are both searching for their destiny in life.
I'm talking to you too.